So that gives you a little introduction to the morning tune, which we would sing at 7 o'clock in the morning before Prabhupada gave his class. One thing, too, that we used to do in the morning class is after the kirtan, Prabhupada said, now we will all chant one round. And everybody would chant one round on their beads, including Prabhupada. Of course, that stopped years later. But it was interesting that Prabhupada should introduce that in those days. So I wanted to answer, actually, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to the assembled devotees. I'm glad that you've come. I like to solve confusions. And one of the confusions was given to me by my Prabhu over here. Your name? Yeah, do you remember last week you asked me about the jiva? You were confused how, and I'm sure everybody in this room is confused, where did we come from? Where did we originate? How did we get here? And why? People are confused by this. They issued a paper, Hare Krishna, about the jiva years ago, but everybody got confused. And the best way to end confusion is to approach the acharya, because he gets rid of that confusion. That's why he's the acharya. You see, if a person writes something and the other people get confused, then you should throw that paper away. You see, because the duty of the acharya is to make things clear so everybody can understand. So I found some verses for you and for me, because I wanted to know. I'm not perfect, you know, but at least I did the research. And there are two very nice quotes. The first one is called, I called it The Fall of the Jiva, and it's based from a letter that Prabhupada wrote, and he says, about your question, the spirit soul is certainly eternal and changeless, and the fall is superficial, just like the relation between father and son cannot be broken ever. Now we are simply in a phase of forgetfulness, and this forgetfulness is called Maya. There is a nice example in the waning of the moon. To us, the moon appears to be changing, but in fact, the moon is always the same. So as eternal servitors of Krishna, our constitutional position, we fall down when we try to become the enjoyer, imitating Krishna, because we're marginal energy. We can go either way. We're not spiritual and we're not material, we're marginal. That is our downfall. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and we are constitutionally to be enjoyed by him. And when we revive this constitutional position, where is no more Maya, Krishna consciousness gives us the opportunity of rendering service to Krishna. And this service attitude only can replace us on our original position. Please, therefore, continue to chant faithfully, and Krishna will reveal himself by his causeless mercy, and you will know everything automatically. the word automatically to me is important. Krishna cannot be understood by a simple study of the Vedas, you see, or by speculation and argument, empirical education. Our movement is based on a descending process, and it's called revelation, because Krishna's in our heart as super soul. And gradually, as we serve and surrender the external manifestation of Krishna, who is called the Acharya or Shaktavashavatar, spiritual master, then Krishna reveals himself, his identity, within our heart as Chaitya Guru. And whatever is being taught to us externally by the Acharya, and simultaneously through our service and surrender to the spiritual master, Krishna reveals himself to us. Not by simply reading books. So don't go to Loy Bazaar, wasting your time. Just simply serve, and Krishna reveals everything. And read Prabhupada's books. Because I'll tell you, you know, Vrindavan is not meant for enjoyment. There's a quote Prabhupada gives about Vrindavan. He said, Krishna purposely keeps Vrindavan as a dirty place to keep out the materialists. Because back in the 70s, we used to tell people to go to Vrindavan, Indian people in Delhi. They said, I don't want to go to Vrindavan, it's dirty there. And Prabhupada said, oh, that's very good. Because if you want to enjoy, he said, you go to New York or London. But the Vrindavan is meant for the devotees. And externally, Krishna keeps Vrindavan as a dirty place so the materialists don't come here. But they're still coming. As we see, the garbage is getting higher and higher. So they're still coming. So anyway, Prabhupada said, for the devotee, Vrindavan, he doesn't see the external part. He sees the internal part through service and surrender, like the gopis. So this is the first quote I found from my Prabhu. What's your name again? Narendra? Okay. So this is the second quote I found for you. And it's called the Summary Study of the Soul. I think. Oh no, that's not it. I had it here, now I'm missing it. Oh, here it is, summary. So this is the summary study of the soul, spoken by Prabhupada. Undoubtedly, the soul is present in the heart of the living entity, and it is the source of all energies for maintaining the body. The energy of the soul is spread all over the body, and this is known as consciousness. On account of this consciousness, spreading of energy of the soul all over the body, you can feel pains and pleasures in any part of the body. The soul is individual, and he is transmigrating from one body to another, just as a person transmigrates from babyhood to childhood. We don't use the word reincarnation. Prabhupada never used that. He used the word transmigrating. When you use reincarnation, that's like a Western term, and it's confusing. But transmigrating is not confusing, because you can easily understand, where's my body when I was 5 years old? It's gone. We have another body. So that's called transmigration. So from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to youthhood, and then to advanced old age. Then the change called death takes place when we change to a new body, just as we change to our old dress to a new dress. This is called transmigration of the soul. When a soul wants to enjoy this material world, forgetting his real home in the spiritual world, he takes this life of hard struggle for existence. This unnatural life of repeated death, birth, death, disease, and old age can be stopped when his consciousness is dovetailed with the supreme consciousness of God. That is the basic principle of our Krishna conscious movement. So far as heart transplant is concerned, there is no question of success unless the soul is there in the heart. So it has to be accepted, just like in sexual intercourse. If there is no soul, there is no conception, no pregnancy. Contraception means to make the womb deteriorated so that it no longer is a good place for the soul. So now you know the meaning of contraception. I didn't know that. You take a pill and it deteriorates and contaminates the womb so that the soul can't appear. That is against the order of God. By the order of God, a soul is sent to a particular womb, and by this contraceptive, he is denied that womb and has to be placed in another. That is disobedience of the Supreme. Just as a man who is supposed to live in a particular apartment, if the situation there is so disturbing that he cannot enter the apartment, then he's put at a great disadvantage. That is illegal interference and is punishable. The understanding of soul research, which would certainly mark the advancement of science, but advancement of science will not be able to find out the soul. It can simply be accepted on circumstantial understanding. You will find in the Vedic literature that the dimension of the soul is 1/10,000th times smaller than the point. The material scientists cannot measure the length and breadth of a point. Therefore, it is not possible for the material science to capture the soul. You can simply accept the soul's existence by taking it from authority. You know, I laugh a lot. They got these companies, these high-tech companies, people who grow old and have disease, they want to live longer. Everybody wants to live longer. Even the cockroach, you go and step on the, he runs away. So there's these companies where they take you and freeze your body for a future time when they find a cure for the disease that you have. And then they thaw you out, and then you take the medicine and you can keep on living. I mean, what a nonsense proposal. They think by freezing the body and thawing it, they're going to become alive again. But these are the cheaters and the cheated. And you got to pay millions of dollars for this. There's millions of people. Or they take your DNA and freeze it. And then when you want it, your DNA is injected into a womb so you can take your birth again. You see? And people want to stay here a very long time. They like it here. They like birth, death, disease, and old age because they're in Maya. They think this is life. They don't realize that they're dying. So all this nonsense is going on. So the difference between God and the soul is that God is a very great soul and the living entity is a very small soul. But qualitatively, they are equal. Therefore, God is all-pervading and the living entity is localized. The nature and quality is the same. You see. The central question you say is, where is the soul and where does it come from? That's what we always ask. And that's what's confusing to many devotees. That is not difficult to understand. See, Prabhupada, he tells you right away to unconfuse you. We're already discussed how the soul is residing in the heart of the living entity and that it takes shelter after death in another body. Originally, the soul comes from God, just like a spark comes from the fire. And when the spark falls down, it appears to be extinguished. But the spark soul originally comes from the spiritual world. That's our origin. To the material world. In the material world, he falls down into three different conditions, which are called the modes of nature. Just like the spark of fire, when it falls on the dry grass, and the fire quality continues. When the spark falls on the ground, it cannot display its fiery manifestation unless the ground is favorably situated. Similarly, when the spark falls on water, it becomes extinguished. As such, we find three kinds of living conditions. One is completely forgetful of his spiritual nature. One is also is almost forgetful, but still there's an instinct of spiritual nature. And one is completely in search of the spiritual perfection. There is a bona fide method for achieving spiritual perfection by the spiritual spark soul. And if he is properly guided, then he is very easily sent back to home, back to Godhead, where from originally he fell down. So isn't that simple? Instead, they about 10 years, no, back in the 80s, they wrote like a 50-page thing, and when you read it, you're more confused than you ever were before. And here Prabhupada does it in a few sentences. That's why he's the Acharya. So now you know the origin and what we have to do to get back there. Here's another point. This is a letter. Regarding your question, God does not discriminate. But so long as we got forms, we have to discriminate. Without God consciousness, the discrimination is there. Why should think that you are American or he is Indian? Upon this platform of discrimination, the whole philosophy of nationalism and communism, I went too far. Communism, this-ism, and that-ism is going on. When one learns how to see individual persons without discrimination, then he becomes perfect. That is described in Bhagavad Gita, quote, "The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and a gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast." Bhagavad Gita, fifth chapter. It is only on the spiritual platform or Krishna consciousness or God conscious platform that there is such discrimination. So if you remain on the material platform and artificially desire no discrimination, it is not possible. We are preaching therefore this Krishna conscious movement so that we may not have material discrimination. The soul has nothing to do with the body. The body is of the different varieties calculated to be 8,400,000 forms. The soul is the same passing through different bodies by the process of transmigration. It is exactly like gold passing through business transaction. But when it is in the hands of somebody, he thinks that it is my gold. And when it is passed through another's hands, he thinks it is my gold. Similarly, the soul being as gold, where he is situated in a particular body, it identifies with the bodily position. And each and everybody is different from the other. What a great analogy. Suppose I have a piece of gold and I identify it, it's my gold. But then I sell it to you and then you think it's your gold. Well, the same with the spirit soul. Wherever it goes, it identifies itself as that object, you see. So the body transmigrates, the soul moves, goes into another body, and then it identifies. Very easily explained here. So long the soul is ignorant and identifies with the body, how can there be equality? So unless one is raised to spiritual understanding, there's no question of equality on the bodily platform. This is a scientific calculation. Women claim to be equal, so that now they are thinking they do not want to become pregnant, so they are killing their own child. What kind of equality is this that it creates another suffering? If we're all equal, then why do we kill the body in the womb? See, that's hypocrisy. As soon as the body is different, how can there be equality? We see that woman cannot work so hard as a man, and a woman can do work that a man cannot do. So where is there equality? It's artificial. Just like in the NFL, the National Football League of America, you don't see very many women there. So there are certain things that women can do and certain things. But actually in America now, there's more women being employed than men. You see, I think it's 60 to 40% more women are being. The reason why women are being employed, why do you think? More than men, why?
They can take any position.
No, but there's a reason why they have to work. Huh? Oh, very good. Yeah, the men come and marry them for 1 year, give them a baby, and then leave. So what's the woman supposed to do? She got to go out and get a job. And that's what's happening. In America, the stats will tell you 50% of the marriages end up in divorce within a few years. And the woman is stuck with the child. Well, how is she supposed to support the child? The man runs away, he doesn't give any money. So she's got to go out and get a job. And that's why more women are employed than men. It's very easy to understand, you see. And that's happening all over. It even happens in our own society. You see, that's why Prabhupada, in the beginning, when he started the Gurukul, he wanted the parents to run the Gurukul, but instead they hired pedophiles to run the Gurukul, and we all know what happened there. But that was, and they blamed Prabhupada. Many of the Gurukulis, they hate ISKCON because they blame Prabhupada why they were abused. Well, that's because their parents didn't follow Prabhupada's order. He never said you hire pedophiles. They used to come walking into school, some stranger. Oh, I love children. Yet that person never had children of his own. So he came there for one thing, to abuse children. Why would someone who never had children be attracted to children? That's pedophilia. It's very obvious. If you love children, you would have your own children. So you can always tell who's a pedophile and who isn't. Very easy test. But people didn't listen to Prabhupada. Why? Because the grihasthas at that time used the woman as a sense gratificatory machine, which Prabhupada said not to do. Now, how do you use a woman as a sense gratificatory? Oh, you get her pregnant, send the kid to Gurukul, and I'm free of the burden. Because what's the burden of sex life? Children. You got to spend your whole life serving them. And then when they get older and you come home from work, you're all exhausted. Everybody's got their hands in your pockets for money. And you got nothing. The wife takes all the money, then the kids take the money, and your pockets are empty, and you got to go back out and work again. That's what grihastha life is, exploitation. You see? And the woman who's represented as Maya Devi, she exploits your body by sucking out the seed to expand her body. And then once she gets your seed and expands her body, she don't need you no more. She only needs you to supply money. That's all you're there for. You're not there for love. You see? Some of the species, like the spider, you know, the female, she acts very sexy to the male. And she sucks the seed out of the male, and then she kills him and eats him. That's grihastha. It's all mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So that's why Prabhupada said grihastha life is a pit, a deep well. Because what's in the deep well? Nothing. You just keep falling and falling and falling, and there's no relief. So you have to understand this process of Maya Devi, how she captures you by using the woman's body to attract you. You know, now there's an independent movement, a feminist movement in our movement, you know. You know, they want to be sannyasi. Some of them are wearing saffron, which is against Prabhupada's teaching. You see, some of them want to take sannyas, which is also against Prabhupada's teaching, and I can prove it to you. But actually, there's something greater than for a woman than sannyas, which people don't even know because they don't read. But I found it. And since Thursday is Janava's appearance day, you know, they use her as an example of why they can be sannyas. They say, well, Janava did it, you know, so therefore I can do it. I can wear saffron, shave my head, you know, but Prabhupada never said that. He said those women who are old and their husbands die, they should wear white, you see, and simply make Krishna their husband through service and surrender. And those who are young ladies whose husbands left them or left to take sannyas, they should become maid servants of the gopis. You see, they should make Krishna their husband, dress very nicely. In fact, Prabhupada criticized one of his female disciples because she wants to look ugly. And what was Prabhupada's reply? Oh, Krishna doesn't like an ugly girlfriend. He wants a beautiful girlfriend. Why you make yourself ugly? You make yourself beautiful, but you make Krishna the object of your affection. You see, by doing, cooking for Krishna, by dressing Krishna. You see, not by rituals. If we do deity worship for rituals, there's no juice. And then what happens? We have men and women on the altar dressing, and then instead of looking at Krishna, they're looking at each other. Because they're doing ritualistic work. They're not doing the deity worship with bhakti, with love and devotion, which is the real object of our worship. Not to do rituals, but to develop spontaneous love of Krishna. Not ritualistic love of Krishna, which ends up in fall down. Instead of looking at Krishna, we look at the woman looks at me, and then we have sex. That's what goes on, you see, because we're not developing spontaneous love of Krishna. Instead, our attention is being drawn to Maya, you see, to Maya Devi. So we have to change that attention. You know, we can. It's so easy to fall down because we're marginal. You see, we have to be alert all the time when we do our service, you see. That's why Prabhupada said we should address all women as mother. Because you're not going to have sex with your mother. Although maybe in Kali Yuga they do. But generally in India they don't do that. Maybe in the West they do that. But not in India. So we address all women as mother, you see. We don't address them as sister because some people have sex with their sisters or cousins, like the Muslims marry their cousins. And that's why they get dumb children. They come out like this, because they're marrying too close to the family. You can't marry with family. You don't marry your cousin. You see, we're different. Anyway, to get back to Janava Devi, I found all the quotes about Janava Devi, and I'm going to defeat those who use the example of Janava Devi as an excuse to take sannyas and wear saffron, and I'm going to prove that it's ambition, self-ambition, and it's not pure bhakti. And it's clearly stated here. And then I'm going to prove to you what's higher than someone becoming like Janava Devi. There's a higher stage which you don't even know about. So let's talk about Janava Devi. Janava Devi was the consort energy of Lord Nityananda. Well, you want to be like Janava Devi, first become the consort of Nityananda. So I got one point against you right there. I don't think these feminists are the consort energy of Lord Nityananda. So I got one point, you got zero. Purport. Janava Mata, mother, is also within the list of Lord Nityananda's followers. She is described in the Gaurya Gandodisha Dipaka 66 as Anja Manjari of Vrindavan. She's a... Yeah, Ananda, I'm sorry, Ananga. I got two plastic things in my mouth, so you gotta bear with me. I got no teeth left. All falling out. So she's a Manjari too. So All the devotees who are followers of Janava Mata are counted within the list of Sri Nityananda Prabhu's devotees. Well, that's pretty heavy. You want to compare yourself to Janava Devi? That's impossible. You see? Then there's another quote I found. When Jiva Goswami was alive, Srimati Janava Devi, the pleasure potency of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, went to Vrindavan with a few devotees. And Jiva Goswami was very kind to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the Vaishnavas from Bengal. Whoever went to Vrindavan, he provided with a residence and prasadam. His disciple Krishnadas Adhikari listed all the books of the Goswamis in his diary. You see. So she came to Vrindavan and Jiva Goswami served her as a proper Vaishnava. So now let's just jump ahead as woman as guru. What does Prabhupada say about that? This looks to be like a conversation. Prabhupada, there are so many Western women, girls in our society. They are chanting, dancing, taking to Krishna consciousness. Many, of course, because superficially, bodily, there is some distinction. So we keep women separately from men. That's all. Otherwise, the rights are the same. Professor O'Connell, is it possible, Swamiji, for a woman to be a guru in the line of disciplic succession? And Prabhupada said yes. Janada Devi was Nityananda's wife. She became a guru. If she is able to go to the highest perfection of life, why it is not possible to become guru? But, there's a but there, not so many. Actually, one who has attained the perfection, she can become guru. But man or woman, unless one has attained the perfection, that's the key word, perfection. You see, the qualification of guru is that he must be fully cognizant of the science of Krishna. Fully cognizant. Just like Prabhupada, you have to be a prototype of Prabhupada. You have to know the Shastra backwards and forwards. I mean, Prabhupada, he'd rattle off slokas like it was nothing because he memorized the entire Vedas. So you got to do that first. That's the qualification of being a guru. You see? So one who has attained the perfection, she can become guru. But man or woman, unless one has perfection. Okay, cognizant of the science, then he or she can become guru. In our material world, is it any prohibition that women cannot become professor? Of course not. There's women professors. If she is qualified, again, he brings up qualified, she can become professor. What is the wrong there? She must be qualified. That is the position. So similarly, if the woman understands Krishna consciousness perfectly, she can become guru. So Prabhupada, he wasn't against it, but one must become qualified. Then this is just a statement. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in his Anubhasa, Virabhadra Goshani was a direct son of Srila Nityananda and a disciple of Janava Devi. His real mother was Vasudha. That's just a statement I found, you see. Then, I read that one. Now, this is how you become. Oh, here, another one. Woman as an Acharya. Prabhupada. This is a conversation with Prabhupada and Atreya Rishi. He was Muslim. He was from Iran, where women are more or less treated as property. Like when you buy a car. They don't have individual rights. You know, this whole thing about triple tilak, you know, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. That's not in the Quran. That's invented by men so they can enjoy sex life with younger women when the old lady gets too old and the older man wants to have sex with 15-year-olds. That's why it was invented. It's not in the Quran. And that's why this there's a big debate going on. That's how Mr. Modi, he got the Muslim vote from the ladies in UP. 3 million voted for him because they're against the triple tilak. You know, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. And some of these girls are 15 years old and they got a baby. Who's going to take care of them? I mean, it's a nonsense proposal to make women, penniless, just so I can enjoy more sex life with more women. Muslims can have 10, 20 wives if they want. There's one Arab, he had 300 wives. You know? Of course, if you can maintain them, there's no harm, because generally in society, there's more women than men, but not in Indian society, because they kill 23 million woman babies a year in India through abortion. I think the ratio is like, the average ratio is like 900 to 1,000, when it should be higher. So men have more of a selection. If you go to some villages, it's down to 700. So men are going to have to start marrying each other, which is going on in Kali Yuga. I think one of our sannyasis, he married two men. You know? Yeah. Yeah, he married two gays. You know? So they can have sex in the buttocks. You see? According to Shastra, you have sex to produce children. Now, I'd like to know, how does a kid come out of the backside through sex life? I mean, I never heard of that. So why get married? You know? Prabhupada says, I have a quote on that. Oh boy, does he blast the homosex. He says, the reason why men are homosex is because they're impotent. They can't have sex. So they marry men. And they have tried to have sex. Impotent means they can't produce children. So they have sex in the buttocks. You see? This is their enjoyment. And that's how AIDS comes. Do you know that? That disease, AIDS, it killed like 150 million people. It's actually a monkey disease. Do you know that? It was spread by a monkey. Some African man had sex with a monkey and then had sex. They pinned it down to your country, France. The first man to get AIDS was a Frenchman who had sex with an African who had sex with a monkey. You know? So, That's, it's a monkey disease. Syphilis. Do you know what syphilis is? Where did it come from? It's a dog disease. Some lady bought a dog and had sex with the dog and then had sex with a man. And that's how you got syphilis. You see? All these diseases come from sex, unrestricted sex life. You see? So this is going on in the material world. Anyway, if Prabhupada says, if a woman is perfect and Krishna conscious, just like Janava Devi, Lord Nityananda's wife, she was acharya. She was an acharya. She was acharya. He said two times. She was controlling the whole Vaishnava community. Atreya Rishi says, Lord Nityananda? And Prabhupada says, yes, wife, Janava Devi. She was controlling the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava community. And Atreya Rishi, you know, he doubted that, being a Muslim. Do you have references about that in any of your books, Prabhupada? He's questioning Prabhupada's authority. I think that's going beyond your paycheck when you question the acharya like that. So Prabhupada says, I don't think, but there are many acharyas. Maybe somewhere I might have mentioned. It is not that the woman cannot be acharya. Generally, they do not become. That's the last word. Generally, they do not become. We have to take that into account. In very special case. Well, we know what the special case is. She's the goddess of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Plus, she was the pleasure potency of Nityananda. So I asked these women, these feminists, do you have that qualification first? Before you think of that? And then what's the next, which is the last point? And to me, the last point is the most important. But Janava Devi was accepted as, but she did not declare. So when you go around, when a woman goes around wearing saffron, she's advertising, she's declaring. And that's going against Prabhupada's teaching. It means when you don't declare it, you don't advertise it. You can be accepted by the Vaishnav community as acharya, but you don't advertise it. And by wearing the cloth of a sannyasi, you're advertising, which is directly opposed to Prabhupada's teaching, because you're declaring yourself acharya by wearing saffron. You're saying you're sannyasi, which is acharya. So it's completely nonsense, this feminist thing of becoming guru and GBC. Yes. Yeah, well, wait. Let me finish the point, and then I'll pass the mic to you, and you can ask. I still have a few more points. So one must not declare it publicly, but you can have your disciples, your following, but you don't declare it, you see. Because Janava Devi didn't declare it, although she is the leader of the Vaishnava community, you see. So this is a very important point, the last point, you see. Then there's another quote. Oh, it's not possible for a woman to become a sannyasi? And Prabhupada says no. So why is she wearing saffron, these ladies? When Prabhupada says no. Another. So far they got two guru aparads. To disobey the order of the spiritual master is guru aparat, the elephant offense. So now here's number two. You see, because when you become a sannyasi, you wear saffron, and some of these women are wearing saffron. So Prabhupada says no. So the devotee says, what is the position of the woman late in life, the wife of a devotee? And Prabhupada repeats it. What is the position? And Brahmananda says, after the husband takes sannyas, devotee says, yes. And Brahmananda says, what is the duties of the woman after the husband takes sannyas? That's a good question. So Prabhupada says, so remain a devotee, a widow. She is not allowed to marry. And this is on a morning walk in 1975 in Nairobi. Then there's another quote from a letter. A female is never awarded the order of sannyasam because a female is never considered independent. Prabhupada states that a lot in his books. Either the woman is under the care of the parents or the husband or the children. Three of them, three protections. They're never independent. In Vedic culture, maybe in Western culture, that's, we're not talking about that. In Vedic culture, there's no independence. They got three protections. So, how can they be independent? Because a sannyasin was never awarded to any female in the past by the great acharyas like Shankara or Ramanuja. No other acharya gave sannyas to a woman, including in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. He says, it's never happened. So why is it happening? Because this is Kali Yuga. And generally, in Kali Yuga, when the acharya leaves the planet, there's chaos. There's chaotic conditions. But Prabhupada says when those chaotic conditions come, the sincere devotees of the acharya rectify by quoting, by doing research work, and bringing the original teaching back, just as we're doing right now. This is Ishtagoshi. This is not mine. I'm not saying nothing. I repeat Prabhupada, and I give examples. Yeah, I repeat Prabhupada. No, it's okay. You don't have to do that. But anyway, we rectify it through Prabhupada's teachings. And Vrindavan is the right place for doing research. Why? Because this is where the Goswamis wrote all their books. They instituted. What does it say here? What does that say? Ishta Goshti began in 1966, New York. And Prabhupada gives a definition, quote, discussion on Krishna topics by like-minded devotees, quote, Srila Prabhupada. It was inaugurated by the six Goswamis at Radhadamodar. They used to meet there and take their prasadam, and their library was located there. Celebrating 50 years of ISKCON, and I give the topics we discuss. And I tell people, bring a notebook and pen because you're going to learn things that you never heard before. You see, every Sunday at 5:30. So, we discuss these things. Now, let's get on with it. No other sannyasi, woman sannyasi, was never awarded to any female in the past by the great acharyas. The female sannyasins are to be immediately understood as pretenders or prostitutes. Oh, Prabhupada is heavy. He doesn't compromise. He's soft as a rose, but he's also strict. You see? He's both. You see? In India, they have organized so many organizations where especially young females are maintained to attract rich woman hunters who pretend to pose as righteous in the society. This is the age of Kali, which plunders away spiritual sense of the human being, and it is only the divine grace of Lord Chaitanya who can protect us from all these dangerous pitfalls. Whoa. See, Prabhupada gives the remedy. He gives us the medicine to avoid these people. You don't associate with the ambitions of people who go against Prabhupada's teachings. Stay away from them because you'll get poisoned or confused and lose faith in Prabhupada. And this is the medicine. The divine grace of Lord Chaitanya. And who's the incarnation of the divine grace of Lord Chaitanya? Srila Prabhupada. He brought us Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see, I have proof of that. Because 500 years ago, I don't have it on this computer. My other computer, something happened. It won't recognize certain things. Anyway, now you understand that a woman can't be sannyas. She can become guru, but don't advertise it. These are the two main points. Don't wear saffron. Just wear your white dress because you don't have a husband. You see. So I suggest these people who are self-ambitious, they should take off that saffron right away because it is insulting to the other Vaishnava community. Now I'm going to give you what is greater than sannyas. And who is that? Vishnu Priya. And Prabhupada explains it right here. The vivid example is Vishnu Priya Devi, Lord Chaitanya's wife. When Lord Chaitanya left home accepting the renounced order of life, sannyas, at the time, Vishnu Priya was on the summit of youth. She was 16 years old only. But when her husband became sannyasi, she also became greater than sannyas. That's even heavier than Janava Devi. To become greater than a sannyasi? So I tell these feminists, why don't you become greater than a sannyasi and do what Vishnu Priya does? I bet you can't do it. I challenge you. I hereby challenge the feminists to follow Vishnu Priya. And what did she do? She was chanting her rounds on the beads. And after one round, she was collecting one grain of rice. In this way, all day and night, as many rounds as she could finish, that many grains she would cook and eat. Whew, 16 years old. Just see. Just see how much austerity she went under. Exclamation point. Prabhupada's glorifying her with an exclamation point. That's important. At 16 years old. Vishnu Priya is the incarnation of the goddess of fortune. But to teach us how much austerity and penance she underwent I think you should follow the footsteps of Srimati Vishnupriya. This is a direct order to somebody. He doesn't say follow Janava Devi. He says, I think you should follow the footsteps of Srimati Vishnupriya. So I challenge all these feminists to follow Prabhupada's direct order. Don't cheat. Don't cheat the Vaishnav community and become self-ambitious and accept your own philosophies. You see, you keep Prabhupada's philosophy intact. No adding, no subtracting. And follow Vishnupriya. That's the first quote. And then there's Vishnupriya, wife of Lord Chaitanya, was a young woman at 16 years old when her husband took sannyas, leaving her without any children. That's a tough life. Because the nature of a woman is to have children. And at 16, to be left, she can't remarry. That's a tough life. But she always remembered him. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that way, she was always serving him, and she was never separated from him. Just see, that's bhakti. Do you know what that's called? Spontaneous love. We don't have that love, but Vishnupriya did. You see, if our wife leaves us, the first thing we do is search for another one. I did. I was married in 67. She was about 4 years older than me. Anyways, we separated. I was a little upset. And I was driving, Prabhupada to a function at a Presbyterian church in San Francisco in 67. And Prabhupada, he put his hand on my knee because he knew I was upset. And he said, don't worry, everything's all right. He knew my mind, although I didn't say anything. That's another qualification of an acharya. He can see the mirror of your mind. And by seeing that, he knows how to engage you in devotional service. So you reach the perfectional stage through your service, your surrender, and your devotion. If a guru can't do that, he's not qualified to be a guru. If he can't see the mirror of your mind and engage you in a way that you reach the perfection of life, he's not qualified. You see? But Prabhupada had that qualification, and he did that. Somebody, he engaged in deity worship, someone do this, someone cooking. He knew what each person was good at, and they were good at it. I mean, Jamuna was a great cook. Kishori was a great cook. She cooked for Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada knew, through looking at her, that she would be good at this service. And she's still doing it. How many years? 40 years? 50 years? Yeah. So that's a guru who can see how to engage a person for 50 years of their life without leaving. That's an acharya. You see? But now, a lot of our leaders, they make disciples, they don't even remember their names. Someone told me the story. This lady met one guru in the airport, and she went up, offered her obeisances, and she said, do you remember me? He said, no, who are you? She said, I'm your disciple, damn it. She was insulted. He didn't even know who she was. That's what's going on. That's Kali Yuga. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, don't accept too many disciples. If you can't remember their names, then don't accept them. But people are after the Guru Dakshina. You know, they want to have nice samadhis. What's the highest sex life for a sannyasi? Do you know? I know, because I'm a fallen sannyasi. That's why I left sannyas, really. What's the highest form of sex life for a sannyasi? Huh? Huh? No. No. The money comes anyway. No. No. Those come anyway. It's something internal. Adoration. That's, Prabhupada said, that's another form of sex life. Self-adoration. That's a higher sex life than physical sex. To have a samadhi so that you're worshipped after you die. Oh boy. That's better than any sex. To be worshipped, you know, for 100 years. You see? So that's why, actually, sannyas is not recommended in Kali Yuga. But Prabhupada did it because he wanted to expand the movement through preaching. I took sannyas, I was 22 years old. I was younger than Lord Chaitanya. And I loved it because Prabhupada gave me the most difficult assignments. Going to Pakistan, there were so many assignments he gave me. The first, I mean, I was blessed by taking difficult assignments throughout my life for Prabhupada. When he sent me back to my father, and my father gave me cow meat and prostitutes, and I rejected him, all those things. You see, Prabhupada was testing. When he gives you an assignment like that, he's testing your devotion. You see, we have to pass those tests. I mean, I'm 20 years old at that time, and a nice 6-foot-tall, sexy lady with hardly any clothes on comes to your door at 11 o'clock. Are you going to say no? There's no one there to watch me. But I knew that Chaitya Guru's watching me. And if Chaitya Guru's watching me, then Prabhupada knows. So I said, no, you go back to my father and you satisfy him. I'm already satisfied with my Prabhupada. I don't need your type of satisfaction, which is 5 minutes long, you see. So we have to pass those tests. Anyway, this is our little discussion because Thursday is the appearance day of Janava Devi. So at least we know the truth about Janava Devi and those who use her as an example to become like her, which you can't do according to Prabhupada's teaching. So the confusion is over. You see, confusion is over. So now I have a question. How many people have received second initiation? Raise your hand. Almost the whole room. 3/4. So we've all taken second initiation. So what are the 12 Brahmanical qualifications of second initiation? Who knows? There's 12 qualifications Prabhupada gives in his books of attaining second initiation. What are they? I bet you can't answer because I can't. And if I can't, then you can't. It's just that I looked it up because I wanted to know. See, that's the key of spiritual life. You got to be inquisitive. Don't accept blindly. If you accept blindly, you're not going to last. because you're not going to get the juice, the ras of devotional service. You're going to be bored, and you're going to start looking at other things. You know? That's why I try and keep Prabhupada with me. So even when I go out, because Prabhupada said if you leave the compound of the temple, you can easily fall into Maya. So I try and keep Prabhupada with me by keeping some of the video clips. Oops. See? And you can read the subtitles.
Winning the battle of Kurukshetra,
I have glasses, but I can read them. So even when I go out, I'm listening to Prabhupada's video lectures. And this costs 900 rupees only. You don't even need a smartphone. You know. Actually, they did a survey in India. They did a survey. They say, why are so many smartphones being purchased? Actually, only about 65% of the population have purchased smartphones because they're expensive. There's a big tax on them. So why do people buy smartphones? Who knows why? Why? Hey, that's right. Because India has the highest number of porn in sites, 4,000. In fact, one news station, NDTV, they did a expose. They put a camera in Parliament, and it was a big lens, and they wanted to see what parliamentarians were doing in the Lok Sabha during, you know, questions and answers. And they brought a close-up to a couple of the parliamentarians, and they're all watching porno on their iPhones, their $50,000 rupee phones that they stole from the tax money, to watch porno during the parliamentary sessions. See? All cheaters. And what I don't understand, I mean, I can't understand it because I never voted in my whole life. Why should I vote for a demon? People vote for these people every year, and they get nothing. They get poorer and poorer and poorer. And they did a survey that the parliamentarians in India, in 5 years, the average percentage of wealth increased 300%. And yet you, or me, who voted for them, get poor. And yet they still vote for them. Why? I don't understand it. Because I never voted for anybody in my whole life. What for? They're all demons. So this is going on. You see? Prabhupada is... I mean... His books are a treasure house for every subject matter. And if you don't take the time to attentively study them, you're really missing out on who Prabhupada's real identity is. Because he reveals his true identity through his books and publications, you see. He said, how do you satisfy Krishna? Because Krishna is not physically here, so how do you know how to satisfy him? So then he uses his own self as an analogy how to satisfy Krishna. And he's never done that. So he gives a quote. He says, to satisfy Krishna, you walk up to Prabhupada and ask, how can I satisfy you? And then I will tell you how to satisfy me. And that's how you satisfy Krishna. So very subtly, Prabhupada's revealing his true transcendental nature by using his own self as an analogy how to satisfy Krishna. You see? Because the incarnation never says it himself. Guru, Shastra, Sadhu. These are the three indications of one who's in incarnation, not the person. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he closes ears if people say you're Krishna. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't even say he's a devotee. He said Dasanu Das 100 times. He's the servant of 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 the devotee. And yet he's Krishna himself. That's how you tell who's a real incarnation, not the ones who go around and say, I'm Krishna. Like this one guru, he had a big beard. He had 25 million followers. And he used to get on stage and dance like the gopis, you know, like a classical dance. But it was stupid because he didn't know classical dance. He just moved his arms around and people clapped and everything. The guy's 75 years old, and then he would look, oh, there's a 12-year-old, and tell his aide, you bring the parents to my house. And then the parents would come, and the aide would say, oh, this person who's a great spiritual leader wants to bless your child. You know, 12 years old. Oh, and the parents, you know, to have this person, leader of 25 million people, you know, to be blessed, this is a wonderful, yes, go inside. And she goes inside and he's naked. And he says, I'm Krishna and you're my Radha. Let us mix. He was raping 12-year-olds. He's in jail now. You know who I'm talking. Don't say the name. We might get in trouble. But actually, there's a total of these 6 self-made gods in jail now. And they represent over 100 million followers. Just see the fallen nature of the people of India. How they accept these fallen self-made gods who are simply involved in rape, murder, and stealing land. They would send their gundas, kick the farmers off the land, and take the land. Just see. These are religious leaders. Prabhupada didn't do these things. You see? But this is the fallen nature of Kali Yuga. Therefore, Prabhupada said to him, told us, the greatest tribulation in preaching wasn't in the West, where he did suffer so many tribulations, especially in the beginning. He said the greatest tribulation of preaching was in India. The government, you know, we had these lands for 2 or 3 years in Bombay, in Vrindavan, in Hyderabad, in Mayapur. We had the land. The government wouldn't give us permission to build. You couldn't build unless you got a license from the government to build. And they were so envious and jealous, they wouldn't give us the permission. So we're sitting on a land that we can't build on for 2-3 years. Otherwise, these temples would have been built a long time ago. I mean, Prabhupada had devotees here in 1967. And they became contaminated by the Gaudiya Mutt. And they lost thousands of rupees by being cheated. Even nobody wanted to become president of Juhu. Prabhupada said, I had faith I had no faith in Tamal Krishna, and I had no faith in Madhavisa. But I had a little faith in Brahmananda. But even he failed there, because when we first moved there, it was Brahmananda who cut down with a machete all the branches and the undergrowth so Prabhupada could put the temporary temple there and put the deity there right away. Because once you put the deity, you can't take it off. That's the law in India. And Prabhupada knew that this man is cheating us, because the land at Juhu was worth 80 lakhs at that time. And he's selling it for 16. Meanwhile, he sold it to 10 other people. You see? And Prabhupada knew this. He said, I will play with this man, and we will see who will win. You know, of course, Prabhupada won. Because in the end, what happened to him, I wouldn't wish upon any living being. You know, the doctor said he had a heart attack, but that's not what happened. His heart exploded, and the blood came out of the 9 holes of his body. That's never happened, where your heart explodes. And Prabhupada said it was Nrisimhadev, because that's what happened to Hiranyakashipu. He pulled out his heart, and the heart just exploded. And this guy, his heart exploded. The blood came out his eyes, his nose, his ear, all the 9 parts of the body, the 9 holes, the blood came out. You see, he was trying to cheat us. So Brahmananda was the first president there. So he built a pandal, you know, for the installation of the deities there. It was a temporary structure, you know, with asbestos roof and a cement slab. It was open on 4 sides, except for the actual deity room. That was enclosed. But where we had the aarti, you could fit about 25 to 40 people. And it was open on all 4 sides. And Prabhupada had his Vyasasana there. So Brahmananda built the pandal. And so after the program, the man came with the bill. You know, and Brahmananda went to Prabhupada. He said, you know, here's the bill. And Prabhupada looked at the bill, and he hit the ceiling. The man wanted 3 lakhs. Prabhupada got him down to 50,000. And he said, Brahmananda, back to Africa. So, you see, we were expert at being cheated. Because we don't know India. You go to America, you go in a shop, and whatever the price is, you pay. You know, but here you got to negotiate and politic and this and that, you know. So from 3 lakhs to 50,000 is a big amount, you know. So that was the end of Brahmananda as president. Back to Africa, which Brahmananda didn't want to go back. That was the worst place in the 70s. I mean, Africa, when they start dancing during kirtan, they don't dance, they do the war dance, you know, and it's dangerous, you know. They have a war dance, the Zulus. They were famous with the British, you know. When the British had control, there was a Zulu uprising, you know. They didn't have guns, they had spears. And when they do that war dance, watch out. They got these big spears, and they know how to throw them. Because every Zulu and the Maasai, you know, the Maasais, they're the tallest people in Africa. They're like 6 or 7 feet tall. And when they dance, they jump up. Some of them now are basketball players because they could jump. So you never want to meet these people because they're warrior class. But the Maasai's, they drink a lot of milk. They maintain cows. They don't eat them. They drink a lot of milk. And that's their job, is to maintain the cows. Because when they get married, they give cows as dowry, you know. And the more cows you have, the more prestigious you are. So it's like a little bit like Vedic culture. Anyway, so when we first got there, you know, we installed deities of brass in, I think it was Nairobi, and you know, and the Africans thought it was gold because it was yellow. So sure enough, they came in one day with their machetes and they say, "We want those," because they thought it was gold. And there was one pujari, I don't know if it was a he or she held up her hand and they chopped it right off, her whole arm. That's how dangerous Africa was in the 70s. So no devotee wanted to go there. Brahmananda was there like by himself. Only the crazy people went there. And Brahmananda deal with the crazy people. You know. So it was tough there. So Brahmananda, you know, he had to concentrate on the Indians because they were sane. But when Prabhupada went there, he said, "No, no preaching to the Indians. You gotta preach to the Africans." And Brahmananda, he just couldn't do it. So it was Prabhupada who ordered Brahmananda to rent a hall at the University of Nairobi. And I have the original paper where Prabhupada designs the poster to be hung up at the university for preaching to the Africans. And Prabhupada was the first one to preach to the Africans. And he didn't care about their war dance. He was untouched, you see. And he taught Brahmananda, this is what you got to do. Don't preach to the Indians because they're going to come anyway. You preach to the Africans. So it was Prabhupada. He took all these risks, you see. He took more risks than anyone. That's why on a morning walk in South India, the Brahmins, the caste Brahmins, asked the devotees, if Lord Chaitanya wanted to preach in the West, why didn't he go there himself? And immediately Prabhupada answered, because he left that for me. He loves his devotee more than himself. So that means 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya knew Prabhupada. Because then why did he leave it for him? See, Prabhupada's revealing very subtly his transcendental nature. He's not just a spiritual master. He's more than that. Much more. He even admits he did more than Nityananda. Can you believe that? That he could say that more than Balaram? Nityananda? Yeah, he said Nityananda, he made one Jagaya Mandai. I made thousands. So I'm more powerful. Another subtlety to show Prabhupada's superiority, his nature of being a superhuman, a superman. He doesn't say it outright, you see, but he says it by qualification. You see, and Prabhupada explains, you know, when you become sannyas, we think we're sannyas. But Prabhupada says, no, that's just the beginning. That's just a rubber stamp. You have to prove you're sannyas. Sannyas means sacrifice and to be a mendicant. But I, as far as I know, there's been very few sannyasis in our movement that act as mendicants. In fact, I only know one sannyasi, Gopal Krishna. He lives in the temple. Prabhupada said all sannyasis have to live in the temple. He's the only one. The others have their palaces. That's not sannyas, that's grihast. But they're imitating Prabhupada, because Prabhupada has a house, therefore I can have a house. That's not following, that's imitation. Prabhupada never said for sannyasi to have his own house. Then take off your clothes, your sannyas, and get married. Because once you get a house, then you need a wife. So they have female secretaries, which are actually their wives, because they cook and clean for them. And that's the truth. So this is not sannyas. Sannyas means you gotta be renounced and a mendicant. When I was sannyas, I didn't get special food. I didn't even get a maha plate. I just got a little piece like everybody else. The only one who got Prabhupada's maha plate was Brahmananda. Because you couldn't get a chance to eat it because he ate it all. In fact, you know, Prabhupada would travel with a few people, and one of them was Harikesh. You know Harikesh? So Brahmananda would get the whole plate of Prabhupada, what was left as Mahaprasadam. And nobody else got anything else. And Harikesh, he got angry and he went into Prabhupada's room and he said, Brahmananda's, he gets all the maha plate, I don't get nothing. And Prabhupada said, you let Brahmananda eat as much as he wants. Because his name, what does the name Brahmananda mean? Ever expanding. And he was ever expanding through prasadam. You see? So, Prabhupada, he was kind to all Vaishnavas. So this is the meaning of qualified. See, qualification is not something you see. You don't hold up a paper and say, I'm qualified as a doctor. No, you got to show you're a doctor. You got to prove it. And that's what Prabhupada says here. He says, Prabhupada, cannot be seen? Then why you are taking education and taking degrees? Why you are appearing for examination in the university for degrees? It cannot be seen? If you are actually qualified in something, it must be manifested. You have to manifest it. You take sannyas, you got to live as a mendicant and beg. You don't pray to Krishna for your daily bread. You can't do that. You have to be a beggar. We used to do that in Vrindavan. You know, the Saivites at Radhakund, there were three of them, and one of them, he was not a nice man. And while Prabhupada wasn't there, he put new locks on Prabhupada's outside entrance because he wanted Prabhupada's rooms back, although Prabhupada had paid for them for 1 year. So who does Prabhupada choose to rectify it? Garga Muni Swami. I had to go there and rectify. And it's just what I did. I broke the lock and put a bigger lock. And then put a sign, ISKCON Center, branches all over the world, a metal sign, painted very nice professionally, you see. So, to fulfill the desire of the spiritual master is the greatest benefit you can do in your life, because then you get the blessings. And without the blessings, you don't get Krishna. You don't get the understanding of Krishna or the understanding of the whole philosophy. You got to get the blessings, you do the blessings, but by fulfilling the desire of the spiritual master. So qualification has to be manifested. And we lived in Vrindavan as mendicants. You know how much Prabhupada gave us to live? 2 sannyasis. He sent me and Subal. He gave us 100 rupees a month. You know, that's not very much. When you go there, there's no cooking utensils, there's nothing. How are you supposed to live on 100 rupees a month? Well, we begged. But what did we do with that 100 rupees? We didn't even use it for ourselves. Do you know why? Because we saw that Radha Damodar never got a garland for Aarti. Never. The deities were wrapped in a bedsheet. That was their clothes. There was no dresses. And there was those big cockroaches all over their body. It was disgusting. So we felt guilty. They said, how Radha Damodar doesn't get a garland and we're going to go out and spend 100 rupees and enjoy? No. We both agreed we'll buy a garland every morning, which was 3 rupees only. So 3 times 30 is 90 rupees. So we were left with nothing. So what did we do? We do what sannyasis do. We took our kapra and went to the, what are they called? The Kiranwalas? You know, they keep the, yeah. And we said, they give us a handful of rice, a handful of dal, a little bag of atta. And that's what we lived on. Begging in Vrindavan, just as the Goswamis, mendicants. We didn't have big plates of prasadam cooked by 10 women waiting for us. That's grihasthaism. See, it's all, you know, in Kali Yuga, it's all topsy-turvy. The sannyasis live as grihasthas, and the grihasthas live like sannyasis. They got nothing. It's topsy-turvy. And that's why we've had a lot of, you know, sexual fall downs of sannyasis. You see. I gave it up for one thing only. A sannyasi, he receives service on behalf of Krishna. Because when you serve a sannyasi, you're serving Krishna. And I couldn't accept that. You know, people giving you things and bowing down and this and that. I said, that's not for me. The only reason I took sannyas is because I got the worst assignments from Prabhupada. But after Prabhupada left, the adventure was over. Because at all the meetings, GBC meetings, which were all sannyas, they were all dividing up the properties of Prabhupada. Well, I didn't want any property. I came from a 22-bedroom house. What do I need a property? I had 8 bathrooms. I used to go to one bathroom 8 times in 8 different bathrooms. So what do I need property for? There was no need. But they were dividing up. They were more concerned about the properties and their prestige and their ambitions more than they were for the service. So I gave my... I didn't want to be part of that group. So I offered my sannyas dress. I'm being truthful with you. I have nothing to hide. Someone who has nothing to hide means he has nothing to lose and nothing to gain. You see? I have no position. That's freedom. What does Prabhupada call it? Independence. I'm independent. I don't have to... prove to anyone who or what I am. Prabhupada knows who and what I am. And that's all that counts for me. He knows what I did and what I didn't do. You see? And I can tell you, there are many desires that Prabhupada told me to do, which I didn't complete. There's so many things, but at least I did some of them. Even if you do one, you get the benediction of going back to Godhead. Even if you do one, satisfy one time, you see. That's why I just want to finish this. It must be manifested. Otherwise, everyone will say, I am quite qualified. You see? But you cannot see. What is this? How I shall distinguish between qualified and non-qualified? You got to see that the person is qualified as a sannyasi or a guru. You can't just rubber stamp. Prabhupada invented that word. That's why I love Prabhupada's books. He uses words I never heard before and expressions. Rubber stamp. I mean, that hits the point. You know, you stamp the paper and you're a sannyasi. No, that's just the beginning. You got to show your sannyas, you see. That's the hardest part. Anyone can be rubber stamped. You know, the qualification must be seen. Prabhupada's insistent, must. This is the conclusion. This is from Bhagavad Gita. I guess it's in France. No, it's Geneva, 1974. Then there's another conversation. Prabhupada, this devotee says, what qualifications should the man have to take sannyas? And Prabhupada says, sannyas? Yeah, the devotee says, yeah, what qualifications? And Prabhupada says, for sannyasi? And the devotee says, yes. And Prabhupada says, who has got no more material desires, then he is fit for taking sannyas. Anya bilasita sunyam. Sunyam means zero. All material desires made into zero. Then sannyas. So it's obvious those, including myself, you know, I admit it. I wasn't free of material desires at 22 years old. I shouldn't have been a sannyasi, but Prabhupada gave me his mercy to be a sannyasi. You see, he gave me permission because as a sannyasi, you got to do more service. And I knew that. That's why my brother was ordered to take sannyas in 1969, I think it was. But Prabhupada, he didn't order me. He offered me, you can stay as president of LA or you can take sannyas. It is your choice. So I had to think about it. Should I take sannyas? I mean, I'm in charge of the richest temple in the movement. You know, we're making $2,000-$3,000 a day. I got my own office, my own bathroom again. You know, I had 8 bathrooms, but my office I had my own bathroom and I didn't let anybody use it. You know, I'm attached to that bathroom. I'm attached to that office. Richest temple, 150 devotees. Who would in their right mind want to give that up? And I started Spiritual Sky, which actually increased book distribution 10 times. Because before, when we showed a magazine on Sankirtan, you know, they'd see a four-armed lady, you know, because they didn't know Krishna was a man. He looked like a lady with makeup and long hair. With four arms, they said, what's this, you know? But when you put a pack of incense on there, oh, they take it right away and they give you $10 when the magazine costs you 25 cents and the incense costs you 25 cents. So you can see how much we were making on Sankirtan. We get $5, $10, $20 donations. So, you know, I started the Spiritual Sky. Not only was I making, we were selling about 25 or 30,000 magazines a month in LA. We were the biggest one selling. And not only on Sangerton, but I had an old man going out and wholesaling it to the hippie and psychedelic shops. You see, I made a rack. I invented a swirling rack where you could hang the incense, and then there was a little hole and you could smell it. And we mostly made fruit incense, like strawberries and cherries and pineapples and coconut. Nobody made that kind of incense. They don't even make that in India now, but that was the hottest sellers. Everybody wanted tangerine incense and orange incense, you know, and coconut incense, you know. So we were wholesale. I was making $5,000 a week just from the wholesale business. That was a lot of money back in the 60s. At least you got to add on 10 times. That's like $50,000 a week on incense. So why the hell would I want to leave that kind of life and live like a mendicant? But then I thought, I said, if my brother is taking sannyas, he must be doing something better than what I'm doing. So I'm going to take sannyas too. Of course, I wasn't ready for the austerity, because we had to go to the bathroom outside, not inside, because we didn't have any place to stay, you know. And we had to beg for some days. We went for 2-3 days with not eating, because we walked. We didn't have a plane ticket. We walked and hitchhiked, and nobody picked up anyone wearing a bed sheet. I mean, the only people that picked us up were Vietnam vets who thought we were Buddhist monks. They picked us up. But otherwise, a lot of times, you know, we have Vishu John stand out there with his thumb, and we'd hide in the bushes, and the car would stop, and then all of a sudden the guy would look through the rear view mirror and see four guys running up with sticks in their hands, and they took off. And we thought, oh, we lost on the ride. So, I mean, it was, we walked 2,000 miles to Florida because it was getting winter time and we didn't want to sleep in the snow. So we got to, I remember we were in Detroit, and we were, this was the first time before we met Indra Dumna in Ann Arbor. He was our first devotee that we made for Prabhupada. And we were walking near the Ford factory, and we sat under a tree to rest because it was hot. It was summertime. And all of a sudden, this boy comes out with a carton of milk and bread. A little boy. We're sitting under a tree. And this little boy comes. He said, "My mama said that I should bring this to you." And then he ran away. And, you know, we had some milk and bread. But it just shows you that Krishna takes care of his devotees, who's niskinchana. He has nothing material. He doesn't have anything. But Krishna takes care of him. So we experienced that. When we started the first temple in Coconut Grove, it was in a park. And I wrote Prabhupada a letter that we started a temple in a park where there's no walls. And Prabhupada wrote back so happy. He said, "Oh, this is Goswami style." Because the Goswamis, they had their temples under the trees. They had the deities hanging from the trees. He said, "You are living the life of Goswamis." So that made us feel, when the spiritual master is happy, oh, you're 10 times more happy, 1,000 times more happy, if he's pleased with your service. You see? That's what inspires you to advance in Krishna consciousness, to satisfy the desire of the spiritual master. That's the only way, to please him, to make him pleased with your service and your surrender attitude. Not to question, not to doubt. You see, the gopis had no doubt, and they had no questions. They couldn't even read. They didn't even read the Vedas. They didn't know that Krishna's God. They only know we love Krishna. That's the highest stage, you see. So anyway, we have to come to that state. So I'm just going to give you this was my last letter that I wrote Prabhupada in July of 1977. I never got a reply, by the way. But I found out later, like 25 years later, that the letter was recorded on the tape recorder. And why I want to read it is to give you, not to glorify myself, but to give you an idea of how you please the spiritual master and receive his blessings. Because that's the most important aspect of our movement. So I found it in the Veda base, the text. There's also a sound too for that. So I said, "My dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my humble obeisance at your divine lotus feet. We fervently pray that your divine grace continue to remain in this world because we need your personal guidance. Even when Lord Krishna disappeared, Arjuna lost all strength temporarily." And then Prabhupada said, "I shall remain your personal guidance. Physically present or not physically, as I am getting personal guidance from my Guru Maharaj." So Prabhupada was pleased with that statement. Then Tamal Krishna, he's reading the letter to Prabhupada, you see. He says, Arjuna, he's reading the letter. "Arjuna was a great, powerful devotee, and he can overcome the shock. But we are most fallen and cannot endure such a shock of having you leave us. We are already mortified by such a thought. Your movement is just now being accepted, and we want you to remain to lead all your devotees towards successful spiritual life. Despite our offenses, all of us are deeply have great love for your divine grace, and our world will become dark without your presence." Materially, you have provided all of your devotees with everything: big temples, money, prestige, and honor, and nice prasadam. And Prabhupada laughs. "That's not material," he says. And then Tamal says, "But personally, I would relish more being with you without all of these things as we begin at 26 Second Avenue. Simply hearing you chant and talk for hours is my only solace. I don't want anything else. We left all these material things to be with you only. So please have mercy with your devotees by allowing us to have your personal appearance as long as And then Prabhupada cuts in and says, he was from very beginning. And then he mentions my brother, Brahmananda. He has worked very hard from the beginning. Tamal Krishna. He says, I may also come to cook and clean for you. And Prabhupada said, yes, you are welcome. Because I used to cook for Prabhupada too. Tamal Krishna, if you so desire, then Tamal's reading my letter, and I say, if you so desire, and carry you also. And Prabhupada laughs. No, you are doing more important business. Do that. But if you want to, whenever you like, you can come. He is a good cook also. So Prabhupada, again, was pleased with my cooking. See, the whole thing is to please the spiritual master. If you don't please him, you don't go anywhere. You're in nowhere's land. Then Bhagavadashwarya says, everyone compliments his cooking. Everyone. Because I learned from Prabhupada, that's why. Directly. Let me see. Oh. Then Tamal says, he's reading the letter more. He says, we have a great debt to repay you, and we are perplexed how to repay. At least your divine grace may stay as long as we try to repay till the debt we owe to you. I think if we work hard and preach and the world recognizes this movement, then you may want to stay here longer. And Prabhupada says that, yes, that's a fact. Again, he's satisfied with my feelings. See, you have to satisfy the spiritual master. Tamal Krishna. And then I say, I am constantly filling this into the minds of the members of the library party. We are now emphasizing your books as a library of encyclopedia of Vedic knowledge. I made a booklet called The Encyclopedia of Spiritual Life, which Prabhupada really liked because nobody presented Prabhupada's books as an encyclopedia. And I had it printed just behind the Juhu Temple. Prabhupada he thought it came from America because the colors were so nice and the paper was imported. And he liked that presentation, and that's why the libraries took those books, because of the Encyclopedia of Vedic Knowledge. We did 1,500 sets in like a year and a half time, which we had 23 books at that time. I don't know what the calculation is, 1,500 times 23, but it's thousands of books. In fact, there were no more books in India when we got finished. And I am here with enclosing reviews from the biggest Marathi, Gujarati, and Sindhi scholars. We had one man going around and taking reviews of Prabhupada's books. And Prabhupada said, yes, it is very nice. He has done quite efficiently. See, this is what we have to hear from the Acharya, to please the Acharya. This is my point for reading this, you see, is how to please the Acharya so you get his blessings. Tamal. And then I say, no, there's another thing. This whole thing, these are new reviews I'm going to read to you. That's what Tamal says. And Prabhupada says, oh? I also have other good news. And Tamal says, that Gargamuni says, the Andhra Pradesh government has sent a newsletter to all libraries in the state requesting them to order our books as they are approved by the state. So there's a lot of libraries, and on, you know, government libraries, government colleges. Prabhupada. So you can do it from other provinces also. See? Prabhupada, he's never satisfied. He keeps egging you on. He doesn't say, oh, that's good, now stop. No, he says, now you go to other provinces also. You see, never become puffed up with your service. That's the purport of this. Don't think, oh, because I did this for Prabhupada, therefore my business is finished and now I'm big and famous. I can give you another example. I gave Prabhupada, when I first came in 66, I gave him most of my savings bonds. I had savings bonds from the U.S. government, and I gave him all those bonds. And then I asked Prabhupada, can I have a set of your books, your Bhagavatams, that he brought from India? He said, no, that is extra. And I just gave you all my money. He said, no, that's extra. So he was teaching me, don't be puffed up because you give Krishna $1,500. What's $1,500 means nothing to Krishna. You see, there's a teaching in everything that Prabhupada says. But you have to be in tune with that teaching. That's called self-realization. You have to see that. So I went out and begged for more money out on the street, and I came and got Prabhupada's books. You see? So never be satisfied or be puffed up because you did something that your business is finished. No. Service is eternal. It's unlimited. You can never be perfect in your service because Krishna, we're not a perfect being. Krishna is perfect. We're not. He's unlimited perfection. We're limited perfection. So how can we become so perfect? It's impossible. So we have to always serve Krishna. Never be satisfied or puffed up with your service. That is the purport of that, at least from my point of view. Also, Tamal says, also the Endowments Commission has also written to all the temples in Andhra Pradesh requesting them to purchase our books. And then Prabhupada says, the minister, this won't go down. Oh, there it goes. The Vrindavan minister, he's very favorable to us. Then Tamal says, in addition, the Gujarati government has requested all libraries in the state to purchase our books by way of newsletters. And Prabhupada says, oh, wonderful. Tamal, here in Maharashtra, the new chief minister and education minister have approved of our movement. And on the basis of these letters, I sent our devotees to five district towns, and they secured 32 standing orders in 3 weeks. See, we were doing book distribution in India. Big books, not those little 10 rupee books. To me, those aren't books. You got to do the big books. That's book distribution. We didn't have any little books. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. And Prabhupada said, may Krishna bless him. You are doing a very tremendous job. So, that is the key to all of this. May Krishna bless. Once you get the blessings of Krishna, you're going back to Godhead. Even if you don't want to go, you got your ticket. Which is true, I don't want to go. Every time I come here, I go to Prabhupada's room and I pray that for 50 years I've been glorifying you. Prabhupada, please give me another 50 years so that I can still glorify you for the next 50 years. That should be the prayer of a Vaishnava. He doesn't want to go back to Godhead. There's no liberation. We don't want to be liberated. You see? That was stated here. I have the quote. I think it's here someplace. Can't find it right now. Anyway, in my eyes, I asked you the, before all this talking, I got off point. We've taken second initiation. So what are the qualities of the Brahmaninical qualities that you took or I took when we became a Brahmin? Who knows the 12 qualities? I bet nobody does. So just see how we have failed in our service to Srila Prabhupada. I'm as guilty as you are, because I didn't know those qualifications either. So we've become initiated, second initiation, and we don't know why we've become second initiated. That's Kali Yuga. See, it's rubber stamped. We don't even know why we took it. We don't even know what the qualifications are. So we have failed Srila Prabhupada. We are failures. We think we're successful, but we're failures because we don't know. But you can know, I can know, if you take the time out and attentively study Srila Prabhupada's books. You see? If we don't know why we took the second initiation, then why should we be here? We're failures. Anyway, I'm going to show you what Prabhupada says about second initiation, the 12 qualifications. The dog eater is better than the brahmana with 12 qualifications. Vipra means real vipra, qualified, not the so-called birthright vipra. But he said a brahmana who is actually qualified with the 12 gunas, these gunas are mentioned here by Sridhar Swami, the original commenter of Bhagavatam. He says, and Prabhupada's reading in Sanskrit from the commentary of Sridhar Swami. He has the commentary. He has a big book he carries with him with the commentaries of all the major acharyas on Bhagavatam. Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda, all of them. He is quoting from Shastra. This is Brahmaninical 12 qualifications. And what is that? He must be religious. That's the first one. Well, that's obvious. That's not a difficult thing to remember. He must be truthful. Well, that we know also. He must be controlling the senses. He must be controlling the mind. He should not be envious. He must be very intelligent. Why do we need intelligent? Well, we got to study Prabhupada's books. If we don't study Prabhupada's books, then there's no need for intelligence. He must be very tolerant. You see, that's in Lord Chaitanya's prayer, to be more tolerant than the tree. He is not envious. He must engage himself always in sacrificing. He must be charitable. He must be a very powerful memory. He must have. That's difficult, to have a powerful memory. You know, we read Prabhupada's books, and in 2 days, we've forgotten what we read. And most of us, including myself, you hear a class, you fall asleep. So you don't remember anything except you're snoring. You know, I mean, that's the predicament we're in. We're the most when I say we're the most fallen, that's not a rubber stamp. That's a fact. We are. We don't have to, but Prabhupada is so merciful. He has come for the most fallen. Therefore, our claim is first. He didn't come for the brahmanas. He came for the dog eaters. And that's what we are, or as good as dog eaters. So he must have very powerful memory. And then very learned scholar. We got to know the entire Vedas, Puranas, Smriti, Shruti, everything we got to know. Oh, Prabhupada said it'll take you 50 years to know the Bhagavatam. And then he said it'll take you another 50 years to know all my other books. So we got 100 years. But no, we go to Loy Bazaar and buy books written by people who are writing for money. Prabhupada didn't write for money. He wrote to glorify Krishna. So why go to Loy Bazaar and read things that waste your time? Because you won't be liberated and you won't advance in Krishna consciousness. And you don't even know if it's authorized. Who knows if it's authorized? And he must be endowed with vows. Quote, I must do it. Even if we don't want to do it, we got to do it. You know? But Prabhupada's very kind towards that too. I can give you a story about Ekadasi. In the old days, in 66, I wanted to show how advanced I was. So on Ekadasi, I wouldn't show up for prasadam, you know, when we'd eat with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would say, where's Gargamuni? And he said, he's fasting. So Prabhupada said, okay. Then the second Ekadasi, I didn't show up. And Prabhupada said, where is Gargamuni? He said, oh, he's fasting. He said, no, I want to see him. So they told me, the Prabhupada wants to see you. So I came up to him. I said, he said, where are you? I said, I thought, you know, I'd fast and to do more chanting and instead of eating, you know. He said, no. Ekadasi means feasting, not fasting. That's what he told me. He says, means feasting. And it was a feast because we would have preparations that we never had during the week. You know, garanga potatoes. Do you know what garanga potatoes are? Who invented that? Do you know? I know. Gaur Hari in San Francisco. He took tubs of sour cream and mixed it with fried potatoes. Oh, boy. You could eat plates and plates of that. And then you fall down from being full. You see? So we had garanga potatoes, all kinds of chutneys. Who knows what Radha Red is?
Lamb.
Hmm?
Lamb.
No. Raspberry chutney. Raspberries are red. We called it Radha Red. There's nothing, you know, to buy raspberries is expensive. We buy them by the cartload and make huge Radha Red chutney. Oh, with garanga potatoes? It's ecstasy. And the potatoes were cooked in ghee, not in oil. Those were the days, you see. Even Prabhupada, he would cook special. He'd make pineapple chutney, raisin chutney, all kinds of goodies. So it was a feast. So that's why he told me, no, Ekadasi means feasting, not fasting. So I stopped fasting. He told me. And that's how I got fat. Anyway, these are the 12 qualities of a brahmana. If you want to find them, they're in Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto. This was in a lecture. Then this is a letter. If he becomes a devotee, he's qualified to deliver his whole family, but not the brahmana, who is so proud. He cannot deliver even himself, what to speak of his family, because he is proud with these qualifications. But a Vaishnava, just like in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj did not ask anything for his personal benefit, but he was so kind. He asked some benediction from the Lord for his father. This is a Vaishnava. He was so much tortured by his father, but still he remembered that, after all, he's my father. So I pray something for my father. He did not ask anything for himself. He prayed at last, my dear Lord, my father was a great offender at your lotus feet. If you will kindly excuse him. So Nrisimha Deva said, my dear Prahlad, not only your father's father, his father, his father, his father, all are delivered because you are in the family. So that is the quality of a devotee. He can deliver all the members of the family, Sakulam. Sakulam means with all the members. And the proud Brahmana, who is qualified with these qualities, he cannot deliver himself. But a dog eater, if he's a devotee, he can deliver his whole family. These are the Vaishnava qualifications. So if one becomes a Vaishnava in a family, he's giving the best service to the family. Unfortunately, if somebody comes within our society, the father and mother become disturbed. Oh, he's going to be a Vaishnava? Let him become a Naxalite. That's a communist terrorist. It's better you become a terrorist than to become a devotee. You see? That's all right, but why should he become a Vaishnava? Immediately disturbed. We have got experience, you see? But he does not know that any boy who becomes a Vaishnava, who is strictly following the Vaishnava principles, he's giving the best service to his family. And here Prahlad says, and it is confirmed by Lord Nrisimha Deva. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto. See? All these things, Prabhupada's books are a treasure house. Everything is, there's nothing that I found in Prabhupada's books that I could not find the answer to. There's nothing. It's all there. I don't need anything else. What for? There's no need. You just got to read them. And that takes determination. But see, Vrindavan is meant for that. If you come here to enjoy, you're going to end up doing offenses. And you're going to go backward instead of forward. You got to come to Vrindavan with the idea that there is no other place where you want to be. You see, I lived in the best places of the world. I lived in Hawaii, which Prabhupada said is paradise. I lived in Florida. I lived in California, the best places in the world. You see, you get the best food, the best everything, the best women. You live in Hawaii, oh, that's all you see, beautiful goddesses. I lived there for 5 years. Who wants to leave Hawaii, where the weather is blessed because of the trade winds? It's never hot, and it's never cold. It's always beautiful. Prabhupada said it's heaven. And where else can you get macadamia nuts? The best nuts in the world are macadamia nuts, only in Hawaii. Well, now they grow them in the Philippines, but they're not so good. The Hawaiian ones are better. Prabhupada loved macadamia nuts. You know. So, anyway, these are the things. that we discuss. I hope we hit many points. It's getting late now. So we'll end the class here. I hope you benefited here and come every Sunday. You see, if you come every Sunday, we talk on different points. And these are the times. The different times, Ishtagoshi. We do multimedia, Guru God issues, that's a big issue. Grihastha issues, we haven't discussed that yet, that's pretty heavy. Gender issues, well, we did a good thing about feminists. Then ISKCON Guru issues, questions and answers. Major topics, parampara issues, Prabhupada's autobiography, multimedia videos, hear, see, and read videos, and many more inspiring topics. If you need to talk to me personally, my phone number is there. Let me see. So anyway, if there's any questions, you can ask your questions, something you didn't understand. But we try and give the highest teaching that Prabhupada has given us so we can advance. When you get the highest teaching, you advance the fastest. And that's what we want. That's why we came here, to advance fast and get the heck out of this place, this material world, because it's getting worse and worse. But a pure devotee, once you become purified, you don't care where you're at. Because you're always in Vaikuntha. You're already liberated because you're in the service of the Lord, and you can serve the Lord in hell or heaven. Doesn't matter. Because the service is the key, not the place. And Prabhupada said wherever he goes is Vaikuntha because he's serving Krishna. So that's the highest level of devotional service. So I try to pick the highest concepts so we can come to that level, even if we're not qualified, even if we have defects. Prabhupada said, even if you desire the perfection but can't reach it, you'll get liberation in this life, not in the next, in this life. He said that. Just by desiring. Because it's on the absolute level, and Krishna is so merciful and kind. You see, and the Acharya is more merciful and kind than even Krishna. We saw that with Nityananda. He was bleeding. And Lord Chaitanya wanted to kill the Jagannath Maharaj. And Lord Nityananda stopped him. That means the Guru is more merciful than God himself. So, any questions? Something you don't understand? Everybody understands everything? That's good. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Mataji.